Only a few short month or two ago, it seemed that President Jacob Zuma may be facing the axe after the highest court in the land, the Constitutional Court, ruled that he failed to uphold the Constitution. Now, after the ANC's National Executive Committee meeting appears more powerful than ever before, the campaign to force the president to step down also seemed to have lost momentum. Controversy has dogged Zuma's political career. On the line, we speak to political analyst Mzokolo Mpolase, who joins us this morning. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning to you and good morning to the listeners.
Thank you for joining us. For all intended purposes, he seemed like a man at the end of his career, a man who had to apologize to the nation and was hammered from all sides. What changed since that apology to the nation to where he finds himself today? Do you agree that he appears more powerful than ever before after the ANC-NEC meeting?
Well, it's important to be mindful that indeed, outside the ANC, this was the case. What you described was the case, in that there was an expectation from civil society, from opposition parties, that this is basically what would break the camel's back in terms of South African society, and that President Jacob Zuma would have inevitably resigned. In the ANC, however, the mood was quite different. It was one that the presumption was already made that there could be moves that could be made by the president to de-escalate this, and an apology being one of them, and certainly a commitment to pay, something that he had made clear. So it's almost as if the outside the ANC, that is, had a different expectation, and certainly within the ANC it was much more still of the same, them continuing to support Jacob Zuma irrespective of whatever was transpiring outside the ANC.
Does the NEC have any other option but to accept his apology and continue having him at the helm until at least after the August local government elections?
Well, they seem to have tied themselves in. And in terms of the NEC and the National Working Committee, which includes the rest of the provinces and whatever branch structure they may have, they've taken this view of, you know, keeping him. And you know, it boggles the mind at some instance, because to the logical person, you would want to deal with controversy before you actually have elections. But in the case of the ANC, the view is taken that it should be after the election. And even then, it is unclear, because now it becomes a case of, well, 2017 is just around the corner, and President Jacob Zuma will be leaving in any case. So as the ANC president, that is, not certainly as the country's president. So they're taking the view that they'd rather wait it out for now and let the natural electoral processes take care of it, rather than them being forced to make a decision, because they take the view that making the decision would mean the organization implodes, which, you know, is yet to be tested. But as I said, this was in the ANC, was the view from all along that President Jacob Zuma was not going anywhere. I've made the point before that his position was long consolidated, and indeed he's had challenges, but now it has gotten to the point of consolidated, and it is also linked to this fear of the organization imploding. So in a sense, they hemmed him into accepting President Jacob Zuma, at least until the 2017 National Elective Conference.
Where does his power come from? How did he basically manage to slide a shake of the Nkandla saga, the tapes, the spy tape saga, and even the Gupta's drama?
Well, President Jacob Zuma's consolidation of power can be linked with, I would say, the gain in strength of the ANC in KwaZulu-Natal. And what has happened ever since President Jacob Zuma has been in office, you've seen KwaZulu-Natal basically be more consolidated. They've got the biggest branches, and basically it continues, irrespective of whatever challenges might be, it continues to be basically the de facto engine of the ANC. And you saw other provinces that were supposedly strong, the ANC in the Eastern Cape imploded, so basically is a non-entity, though they still have the numbers. In terms of organized politics, they're not able to play the politics that they did maybe before 2007. So this has meant that within the party, by virtue of numbers, by virtue of organization in KwaZulu-Natal province, and certainly other provinces that align along the Zulu, Mpumalanga, Limpopo, Northwest, and so on, it has meant that he has the strength, organizationally speaking. And then, of course, in terms of the presidency, well, you know, you would know the changes in the police, changes in the National Prosecuting Authority. So basically, you have almost as if a perfect storm, one within the party itself and one within the state, which, you know, the presidency has effectively consolidated all control to the presidency, means that he stays consolidated both within the party, his power base, that is, both within the party and both within the state. And until that changes, there's not much, really, that can stick on him. And if a constitutional court judgment cannot stick on you, well, that means that something else, something far greater, which I don't know what it will be, would need to stick. But certainly at this stage, it's quite consolidated and therefore it's quite immune. It can come in the form of Gupta's shake and what have you throughout his introduction within South Africa's presidential positions, both within the ANC and the country.
Is the decision by the ANC to protect its leader going to cost them at the elections?
I would think so. I would think so. But the ANC, that's why I say it boggles the mind, is that they take the view that so long as the votes come in, their mandate is still clear. So, yes, there's a drop in terms of the number of people that voted the ANC in the last national and provincial elections, and, you know, there would inevitably be a drop as well. But so long as they continue to get votes, it really doesn't matter. I would say it's similar to what a business owner, for instance, who says, so long as the money keeps on coming in, I am happy and therefore am successful in business, despite the fact that maybe your business in the short term may not be good at customer service, may not be good in compliance, may not be good at forecasting and preempting and therefore aligning with future threats. Yes, the money may be coming in, but it doesn't mean anything in terms of you moving forward. And I do think that the ANC will need to recognize this at some point, that you can only take so much reputational risk. You can only take so much internal risk management. I mean, the ANC since 1994 has had at least three breakaways from it. So that will happen continuously if they don't manage this. And at some point, it will cost them. It may not be in the past provincial and national elections, which we saw a small drop, and we will see another small drop of about 3% at the most conservative level in this local government election. And then, of course, much greater ones in the ones where there will obviously be contestations, you know, the Nelson Mandela Metro and so on and so forth, as many of the political parties have mentioned. So it is that case, but the votes will still come in, but the party will need to have an internal reflective process, one that says that they can only take these kind of decisions up to a point.
Another family that survived the NEC meeting is the Guptas, as there will be no investigation with one ANC member who stepped forward to give a written statement. What do you believe happened with regards to the other MPs who made allegations previously, but now suddenly decided not to give written statements?
Well, first and foremost, it is about self-preservation, in that you are an MP by virtue of having been on the ANC list. So that in itself is basically becoming a whistleblower, but not in private, as it happens with normal employment. You'll have to be whistleblowing in the public domain, which you know, frightens a lot of people because it links to livelihoods. They'll lose their job. They lose, you know, all of, because as I said, they're there at the behest of the party. And also the way that they've done this. So ever since Jonas came along, the view was taken at Luthuli House that if future submissions are to be made, they to follow a certain format, in that they need to be legal, not in the sense of hearsay, I was approached or whatever. And then many of the people who were, you know, for all intents and purposes, part of informal discussions, now had to rethink it, because now it's taken a legalistic form and one that would go through the ANC's disciplinary processes or legal processes, and certainly beyond that also go within the state's own processes, legal or otherwise. So that scares a lot of people. So you do know that if you start to think philosophically and start to think legally about many things, you may find that they no longer hold weight despite the informal discussions that many of these MPs and many of these ministers or would-be ministers mentioned. So it effectively meant that Jonas is the only one that came forth, and also it was a PR nightmare. You'll recall the bargaining that was done before Mgcobisi Jonas released his own statement around this issue. And to then the ANC sought to effectively manage this process rather than one of a case of the person going to the media and saying it as it is. They sought to enforce more organizational discipline, which effectively meant that it was just the one submission.
Mzakola, thank you very much for your time this morning on Radio Islam.
Thank you for having me.
Have a good day. Bye.